listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 277 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
We're here recording on the 1st of February, yeah, the first of the month for once. Happily. I say happily. I mean, there's still the world kind of, you know, doing that thing. And we're going to kind of actually talk about the thing today. So if you don't want to listen to anything to do with
COVID
and the pandemic, you may just want to give this episode a miss. However, there is a very good reason why we are talking about this, because it turns out that last year, a bunch of researchers did a study, and it's called Pandemic Practice. Horror fans and morbidly curious individuals are more psychologically resilient during the COVID-19 pandemic. Well, you know what? So we can't ignore a good excuse to start talking about horror movies in general. Anyway, and it's very timely and topic appropriate for the general state of the world at the moment. So, you know,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't you feel psychologically prepared, Retroid?
A little bit.
A little bit. Okay.
Which is like, nerds will have to stay in a lot longer than usual. Is it define usual?
I want to point out that even though this is a psychological study, and normally it would be behind some form of paywall, it appears to be made freely available because the journal holders involved or publisher involved are making any content around COVID at the moment free during the course of the pandemic.
Fair.
It helps with stuff to do. Obviously, this would help for people trying to come up with psychological treatments or ways to help people through this on a psychological level at the moment. Though it's not specifically stated, but it does sound like I think trying to gain preparedness now whilst you're in the middle of it might be a bit of a bit trickier than having already been essentially a pandemic film and or horror film buff prior to this point.
I mean, you say that, but I mean, I've known people who have not coped with this well, and they are not, like, you know, film buffs in general, let alone specifically, like, you know, apocalypse, you know.
They don't specify apocalypse. It's specifically horror and pandemic.
Pandemic films, then.
Stuff where you have to, where a degree of prep is simulated.
But yeah, it's...
But not preppers, because that's a whole different thing.
To some people, what we're living through now is still almost sci-fi. It's almost like unthinkable to actually live through.
I think that, to be honest, that's probably kind of where some of the denialism comes from.
Yeah.
Would it be classed as a form of disassociation?
Hmm.
From the subject.
I suppose, I mean, it's
for reality.
Say, for example, if, like, next year, aliens came to visit, and it was real life, there'd still be people turning around and going, no, it's fake, I can't believe this, I literally cannot believe this. It's not within their realms of what they can actually believe, literally.
I don't think the issue is believing it and stuff. I mean, the study itself looked at the concept that been able to obviously go through a fictional experience of what would otherwise be a life-changing event if it were happening for real prior to something resembling that life-changing event, like the pandemic happening for real, by having that simulation, by having a degree of modelling going on in front of them is a safe way to obviously experience that and learn from it. Example, and also gain a degree of expectation of what might happen in related scenarios. so that they then have kind of like tools and stuff or mental resilience basically to get through something like the pandemic.
I mean, it is
it's the film equivalent of talking yourself through an upcoming difficult conversation, only it's actual fiction instead.
It's I would also be interested in, you know, with the whole thing, because, you know, there's just, you know, a group of people who they just do not like anything which is, you know, a bit too out there, a bit too sci-fi, a bit too fantastical. And they just, you know, say, yeah, I'm not going to bother watching that. I would like to see what the sort of correlation is between, you know, people who refuse to watch sci-fi, or, you know, what they see as, you know, anything that's, you know, sci-fi or, you know, too out there, and how they're coping with all this, or whether it's just a knee-jerk, nope, it's not going to, I'm not going to believe it.
Well, the study, which looked at, I think it was like over 300, the response of over 320 individuals for a web survey, the people who have never seen pandemic films and their ability to feel, to exhibit any form of preparedness for the current pandemic, their preparedness score was far lower than those who had seen basically several or many.
What is defined as preparedness in this case?
It's basically, you know, not freaking the fuck out.
Not freaking the fuck out.
Let me check. What was the definition?
Is that the scientific term?
Oh, yeah. So, in addition to helping cope with future difficult situations, simulations would presumably also help prepare for them. This means that the individual who simulated pandemic experiences more often through fiction might be better equipped to anticipate a pending pandemic, foresee its downstream effects, and prepare for it by obtaining the proper material resources in the early stages of the pandemic. To assess preparedness, the participants were rated on a 7-point scale, strongly disagree to strongly agree, how much they agree or disagreed with 6 statements. It's stuff like, you know, the statements were things like, I was mentally prepared for a pandemic, like the coronavirus pandemic. I was able to predict how bad things would get due to the coronavirus pandemic before things really took off. I would say I'm definitely somebody who would have scored strongly agreeing with that second statement there if I had been participating in the survey. Because I was saying to people sort of end of January last year, this doesn't look good. Maybe we should be doing something about that.
But that's literal, like, one's own interpretation of how one is prepared, rather than how...
Yeah, that's almost the same case of almost all psychological tests. Keeping in mind, they can't even simulate in person at the moment anything. You can't do the equivalent of a Bobo doll experiment at the moment for any psychological testing. Or, you know, any of the classics from the 60s and 70s, there's no way you could do a psychological experiment on that scale at the moment.
But, I mean...
And, in fact, a lot of psychological testing is based on surveys at the moment. I mean, they said it's not like it's for definite, but they said there's a strong correlation. So the only way you could do a further study on that, which they haven't suggested anything in their conclusion for a potential further study, is if, when it's safe, you do that whole thing where you expose people to types of media and then get them to answer questions or perform tasks that, you know, either again do or do not simulate anything related to that. I can't remember what the name of a study like that would be, but that's the only thing they could do. But you can't do something like that at scale at the moment, even online, like get somebody to watch something and then do it. Apart from anything, one of the biggest issues with trying to do that would be getting the rights to show that content, which would be far harder to do online than it would be if you've got a bunch of people in a room and a projector. Because even though there are copyright laws against public screenings, you at least might be able to ring it for an in-person one versus, oh yeah, we're just going to show some people online. I just imagine how the rights holders would fucking freak out then. Yeah. It'd just be like, But also the point of their study, that one of the angles of the study was that, like, people being exposed to stuff prior to the pandemic, so like general horror films and pandemic films. The zombie films also kind of crept into pandemic films there. And stuff with, like, prepping as, like,
Element as well. The thing is, though, is that, I mean, there have been a couple of, you know, kind of pandemic-based films, literally pandemic-type stuff.
Yeah.
But by the same token, there have been far more, like, zombie-type films that have a similar characteristic of, you know, kind of the threat of being infected from outside.
Aside from stuff like, obviously, Contagion.
Mm.
Or, what's the one with Dustin Hoffman? Outbreak.
Yeah, which I saw in the cinema.
Yeah. I mean, even under this element, I wonder if Mission Impossible 2 would also be classed under this as well. Mm-hmm. Mission Impossible 2 has a whole thing about a virulent virus thing getting loose, potentially.
And I mean, it is one of those things where, you know, it has been kind of used in various, obviously kind of in genre films, but also in like TV tropes where they've been, or at least, you know, kind of potentially have been. Like, I think, was it the second season of Heroes? That was meant to kind of be going into, like, a Contagion type thing.
They specifically did films, though.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that it's more likely people would have seen a film than a TV series. Especially Heroes. More people would have seen a film than any episode of Heroes.
Wow, yeah.
So what I'm hearing from all this is we should definitely have, you know, like, pandemic... And, you know, thousands dying in Emmerdale and EastEnders. And, you know, neighbours should have a lockdown year.
And people will then feel more psychologically prepared the next time this rolls around.
That's going to be the interesting thing. It's like, at the end of this, are we going to have more TV programmes that are dealing with a pandemic? Or are we going to have stuff that kind of almost like glosses over it? Like, it completely ignores it. Even stuff that is based in the real world. Is, say, for example, the Marvel Universe going to have, like, a, you know, we're completely ignoring the pandemic? Or are they going to kind of be like, no, this happened?
Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one, because they're, well, especially with the case of, you know, the MCU.
Hmm.
You've got a series where it's supposed to be all these fantastical threats and stuff like that. So something that would previously have been a fantastical threat just being matter of fact there.
Yeah.
Would they do it? Or would it be let's try and keep it to the fantastical threats and not the oh holy shit, this is what we're all having to deal with threats. Yeah, it's kind of I could see both.
I mean, I don't think anyone's going to take a proactive stance based on this study to, like, ensure populations are prepared for bullshit. And I think another issue is that despite what, and I should probably say what the authors' names are. So we've got Colton Scrivener, John A. Johnson, Jens Kierkegaard Christensen, and Mathias Klassen. Despite their findings, I don't think it's going to go any further, unfortunately, than this study. Like, I don't think anyone's ever get not that we know, because film archives are terrible for that period, but did anyone make masses of silent films after, like, the Spanish flu pandemic of, like, 1918 to 19, was it 21, 22 or something?
I mean, the cinema industry was
in its infancy. At
that point. So I don't think that would be kind of a fair comparison.
The thing is that I don't even know if any... I can't remember, because I've read some literature from around there during my degree. I can't remember the flu massively featuring in it. I'd get TB references, especially TB references actually cropping up in a lot of the literature I've read that was like pre-1960. But didn't get really anything massively referencing the Spanish flu outbreak.
Yeah, I'm definitely not aware of any.
I don't think anyone like massively like used it as a cultural thing.
I think as a cultural thing, chances are the Spanish flu kind of thing has been kind of used in various different fantastical. You know, kind of media texts as like a kind of, oh, it was actually this thing rather than a flu.
Do you know what?
What?
Scarily enough, it's not a contemporary reference to the time of 1918 to the early 20s, but a plot point of Stephanie Meyer's Twilight novels is that Edward Cullen had the Spanish flu, and that's why he got turned, because he was going to die, and thingy, he's the father figure to the Cullen family, is like a doctor or something at the time, but also a vampire, and he turns Edward.
I just love the fact that we're watching Nurse Jackie at the moment, and the guy that plays the head of the Cullen family is the jackass doctor called Dr. Cooper, who's just completely, like, so just so different.
They're very different doctors, aren't they? Very different.
Incredibly different personalities.
It must have been quite a shock to go from acting on something like Nurse Jackie to acting in the Twilight films as a vampire. A massive shock to the system. Anyway, I feel like there would be certain types of like horror film or, you know, like outbreak films that would prepare you better than others. I feel like, you get ones which are kind of like forms of rabid vampirism, but I feel like those ones wouldn't prepare you that well. Just a theory.
That's the thing. It's based on how close the model is.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, if you think about, like, AI and stuff like that, part of the reason why we don't have general AI at the moment is because computers at the moment, kind of, they model so specifically. That they can't just kind of, you know, think about a couple of different tasks and then go, ah, that's all right, we can try driving a car now without, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of, you know, data kind of input for the model.
Well, yeah, you train a model. Yeah,
exactly.
And you have to do hours. We say you have to do hours on it. It depends on the speed of your hardware.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, obviously the modeling is based on kind of the rules and,
yeah,
you know, goals and, you know, various different kind of obstacles that you may kind of get and all these different things. And yeah, during a pandemic, the best course of action is to probably watch, you know, kind of how the movies handled it, which is not necessarily, you know, kind of the best kind of case for, you know, physical survival,
yeah,
but in terms of kind of the mental capacity and the capacity for the characters themselves and what they go through.
Well, yeah, that's where the whole simulating thing,
yeah,
comes from. It's that safe environment to play almost with that concept, you know. There was another element which we haven't got to yet. So aside from, like, they looked at the horror fans. They looked at people who also watched both horror and pandemic films.
Mm-hmm.
But they also rated people for morbid curiosity.
How did they rate that exactly?
Yeah, it's just...
I'm assuming...
Curious about that.
They had a series of questions that were related to the concept. Where is it? Methodology. Okay, so... Morbid curiosity, it was measured using the morbid curiosity scale. Morbid curiosity has been a defined trait that motivates a person to learn about dangerous or threatening phenomena. The morbid curiosity scale is a 24-item assessment that is used to measure trait morbid curiosity as well as the four sub-factors of morbid curiosity. Only the total score from the morbid curiosity scale was calculated and used in analyses.
That's interesting, because, I mean, you said about it kind of looking at stuff that was, did you say some stuff that was useful to that? So I would always kind of associate morbid curiosity with looking at stuff that would not necessarily benefit you directly.
Well, I mean, I can't remember this precise point, so I can't go and scroll to it in the study, but there was a point where they discussed how, like, somebody who would be morbidly curious is the kind of person who wouldn't immediately have their gut reaction to be shying away from the sight of a dead body. Their thoughts would be like, oh, there's a dead body, how did it get there? Whereas other people who don't have morbid curiosity would be, like, turning around, probably puking. The morbid curiosity person may still puke, but they'll still be wondering how, why.
That's
they'll just be literally standing over the body, going, "How, bleh, how."
Hopefully not.
I know. You know, to me, morbidly curious would be Oh, I wonder how deep that knife wound is. Let's see how far my finger goes inside it. You know, that kind of thing. That would be morbidly curious.
Not like the elbow.
Or the people that hold a stick and pick at things. I might be one of these people sometimes.
Poke a stick at things. You do usually poke a stick at me, I have to admit. Are you morbidly curious about me?
How about I just hit you over the head with a stick?
Ooh, that's not as good.
It's terrible. So basically, if you had this kind of combination of basically being a horror and terrible things happen, film buff, basically, and also just generally like have the opposite type of curiosity to everyone else in the world, you're probably doing okay. They didn't test, though. It sounds like they didn't necessarily test for things like extrovertedness versus introvertedness, so there isn't that kind of comparison, because that's the anecdotal thing. There might be some studies on it by now, but the anecdotal thing we've seen over the course of the last year is that the people who really like to go out socializing are the ones that have been suffering the most during all of this.
But that's not necessarily the case. And I think people suffer in different ways as well. It's not just, you know, literally a case of, you know, oh, somebody's been kind of bored at home for this entire time. There are massive kind of, you know, there is a massive psychological impact on not being able to leave your home.
Yeah, I think there are some people who have genuinely suffered during this by, you know, being locked away. So yeah, that's one thing. It's not really to do with the watching horror though. It's arguable if you're of the squeamish variety and you watch a particularly chilly horror, and then you are stuck alone at home. That might not be a good idea.
I think the one thing that needs to be said also is the fact that like Contagion and, you know, all these films that about outbreaks and whatnot, and even like zombie apocalypses and whatnot, they're all kind of worst case scenario in the sense of it being way more virulent than even COVID is now. Yeah. Like, you cannot lock down. You probably could lock down because there are so few, kind of people. It's not just like the population has been decimated. It's basically been like halved or quartered or worse. We're not seeing that.
I do think that this is going to make a lot of pandemic and outbreak and zombie and, you know, apocalyptic, you know, things, anything to do with anything that can be transmitted. It's going to improve them, because you're not going to have maybe just one person who, you know, wanders into a shelter and says, "No, I'm fine," and then as soon as the doctor turns away, they're going, and they're bleeding from their eyes.
Yeah,
it's not going to be one person; it's going to be a whole group, and they're going to be assholes about it.
It's going to be like 90%.
Thinking about how these things will be in the future in terms of like kind of the films and TV series and whatnot of kind of Contagion based stuff, I think actually having a real world recent model will change that.
I feel like we're going to end up with more alien infection originated pandemic films.
Why is that?
Because you'll usually get something that's more fictional of the thing that's happening.
Right, okay. Yeah.
You know, so like the McCarthy era and the threat it brought to Hollywood. Like, nobody directly made films about McCarthyism, but the theme was there in extremes with all the, you know, sci-fi B movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And the Red Threat. So, like, I feel like if we do have infection-y things, it's going to be, like, something a bit more fantastical. Ooh, maybe we'll get another thing, maybe. Not that I've managed to make my way through the soft reboot / prequel from a few years ago yet. Mm. I've fallen asleep during it, which is not good. I was just trying to look for a term that they used. So that it's emotion regulation skills. This is one of the things that the films help you do, is build emotion regulation skills.
And how do films do that?
It is that simulation thing. It's the it's pretend play, but you're imagining it.
Okay, so you're kind of imagining, you know, kind of friends or family dying.
Yeah. That seems to be what they're hinting at here. Of course, if you're the kind of person who is unable to connect with characters in a film and empathize with them, you will gain no benefit. And there are people who can't, you know.
But maybe there's people out there that will kind of empathize more with the guy that's like, no, this is not happening. This is just some sort of hoax. Because, that always happens. I think that I'm pretty sure that happened in even the Langoliers. You know, there's one guy that was just like contrary to everybody else when everybody else was kind of coming together to, you know, kind of fight through and kind of say, say there's one guy going, nah, he'll never make it. I identify with that guy.
Yeah, I think in future, maybe, you know, the sensible people will be in the minority. There, you know, so the crackpot character is the one that says, you're going to have to use alcoholic rubs. You're going to have to wash your hands every single time, you know, you touch anything outside. You're going to have to wear a mask. And everyone's going to have to wear a mask, not just the ones who are ill, because we're protecting each other. That's the whole point.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, the rest of them are going, oh, no. I've heard of that vitamin C cue, is it?
But I mean, it's kind of weird to think that, you know, kind of looking back at, say, for example, even like Jaws or something like that, where we're kind of like, oh, the scientist is obviously, you know, kind of right. There is, you know, shark in the water. You should close it down. And we're just kind of going, what are you doing, Mayor? You should not open that fucking thing.
The crazy thing is that like everyone was making that Jaws comparison last year. What if I bought myself a Jaws jumper from Last Exit to Nowhere, because they got real snarky last year around July with some of their with their Jaws line, and they were sort of like kind of say, you know, they weren't directly saying it, but it's like, isn't this pandemic all like the fucking situation with the mayor and the town council and everything in Jaws?
Yeah, and it's kind of just like, are we gonna start believing experts now, or are we gonna pretend that, you know, the politicians know everything?
I mean, to be fair, I do believe certain political leaders are part of the problem there, and certain political leaders have since been voted out of office and replaced on one side of the Atlantic. But, you know, I'm trying to think. I like the idea of this study because, yeah, we love watching horror films. And zombie films.
So are you trying to say that you like the idea of us having an advantage over everybody else? That's what you're really saying.
That's what I'm really saying. I want to feel like the hours I have dedicated to the films of George A. Romero have paid. Because it's not just the zombie films. We've watched two versions of The Crazies, the original and the remake, you know, plus obviously all the dead films. Watch stuff like, I mean, I saw Contagion, I think, a million years ago. Outbreak, I remember more for some reason. I'm just trying to think, what pandemic films have I watched? Oh, not necessarily films, but again, sort of comparative films. But I've read the graphic novel of The Strain and watched all of season one of The Strain. The Passage. Never always be sure how long something is on Kindle before you buy it, because you will be tricked. I've said on this podcast before, years ago, that when I finally saw a physical printed copy of The Passage, I was shocked at how big it was, and I finally understood why it took me like a million years to read it on like my first ever Kindle, which is one of the early models. But yeah, there's like I just feel quite prepared. This past year hasn't shocked me that much in terms of the progression of the disease. People's stupidity has shocked me. Because the films have always been, and stuff, everything's always been a little bit more optimistic about the intelligence of the humans involved.
I suppose part of the issue is that when you're making a film about a pandemic, that film is about the pandemic. It's not about basically how different political states trying to get political edge on this or that, or, you know, other kind of things in society, like the rise of fascism during pandemics.
But you know what?
Stuff.
They didn't really convey it in the film, but the novel of World War Z, which obviously the film is based on, does actually get that political nuance. Like, they make a clear distinction between how basically China and North Korea react to things, the whole thing that happens between India and Pakistan with them blowing each other up, that happens in the novel. I mean, it happens in the film. Nuking each other. The book at least did manage to get the political elements in. I think perhaps sometimes it's film that doesn't get everything in.
I would like to see, that is one of the films / books, you know, whichever way you want to come at it. I can see there perhaps being a TV series of that, or in a longer form adaptation, because I would like to see that, because anything like that that's in a film, you're gonna miss a lot of that, aren't you?
I mean, it kind of makes me think that maybe one of the way, well, I mean, it probably wouldn't affect too much, but I mean, say for example, World War Z, if it was after this pandemic, would it be like there was far more hand washing and mask wearing after it, or?
As a little tidbit here, I did see a headline. I didn't get the article because I just saw a screenshot of the headline. But because of all the social distancing and hand washing and alcoholic hand rubs, you know, masks, things like that, that incidences of the flu are massively down.
Yeah.
In comparison with previous years.
I've seen that headline as well.
I mean, to be honest, I hadn't seen the headline, but I pretty much said, like, on day one when this all happened, it's like, yeah, this will have a knock-on effect with not just COVID, but all other kind of, you know.
I would like to think that maybe our nation's crippling headlice situation among children has finally perhaps stabilised a little.
Not to mention STD outbreaks.
Yeah.
Super gonorrhea may actually be...
It depends, though, because...
The less successful DC superhero.
The groups mostly being affected by super gonorrhea have been younger people, and it's unfortunately been younger people that have perhaps been taking risks of social gatherings more.
I mean, I'm not entirely sure about that, to be honest.
Social gatherings to potentially get booty more.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a case of... I don't think that there's one part of society that you can blame, because, you know, for every, you know, kind of teenager that goes, oh, it's, you know, the old people, you know, kind of, they're not wearing their face masks correctly. They don't even know what meters is, let alone two of them. And then you have like elderly people going like, oh, well, those kids down the road, they're not, you know, kind of social distancing. They're not wearing face masks and that. And it's just like everybody's blaming each other.
Yeah.
For not following the rules. And, yeah, quite frankly, it's, a bit ridiculous just how many people aren't following the rules.
But anyway, perhaps more of them should have been watching horror films, and especially pandemic films.
Probably not the kids.
Well, I mean, let's think about this. Is there any horror films that, zombie horror films that are low enough rating for the kids? Is World War Z a 12 or 15?
I think you said 15.
I'm just thinking Peppa Pig gets foot and mouth. Wind in the Willows gets cold because of local TB levels.
Do you know what? It feels weird, but I think when we had the foot and mouth outbreak in the early 2000s, that the public did take cleaning their boots and not walking on farmland far more seriously than some of the preventative measures we've been doing just the past year.
You say that, but... I mean, when it comes to people that aren't used to being in the countryside, are their behaviours going to change?
No, I don't remember, and I do remember the news a lot once I was like a young teen growing up. I don't remember there being anywhere near as many complaints about people coming down from upcountry and them not following the stuff that was the precautions that were in place at the time. And in fact, actually, unlike the COVID outbreak, because it was animals, you saw imagery on TV regularly of the mass graves, of the burning carcasses of animals that had been slaughtered as a result of foot and mouth. And even though our morgues have been put to breaking point, our TV news and that haven't been taking advantage of that on a visual scale. It would be distasteful. But at the same time, news channels over in, like, I remember seeing some footage from some New York.
I was going to say New York. Last year. Yeah. They were talking about having to bring refrigerated lorries in. But as you know, with you mentioning the foot and mouth outbreak and the mass cattle graves, that does remind me of being in one of my local supermarkets and hearing a conversation with two youngish women. So, you know, it wasn't, you know, the little old ladies kind of thing. And they, you know, they were picking stuff up, you know, and they were talking, all those poor little, you know, cows and calves, you know, being slaughtered. It's, you know, it's shocking, as they were putting, you know, pork joints and stuff in their baskets. And it's like, you know, allow me to blow your mind by telling you what you're putting in your basket. Because, you know, I think they were buying lamb. It's just, you know what lamb is? It's not like printed in a lab or something.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, you know, that there's kind of two levels to it. A bit like, you know, with this, where we've got, you know, what's actually going on and what people actually see is very different. You know, people may have, you know, kind of may know virtually nobody that's had COVID, let alone died from it. And then, you know, they're basically, you know, thinking that this is all a hoax or it's basically never going to reach them anyway. So they go out and then they, you know, kind of get infected and they pass it on to family members and whatnot. And then people start dying. And that's when they go, oh, shit.
I mean, it's certainly gotten to the point now where I feel like everyone, at least that I know someone who's had it. I know now at least one person. I'm not going to say who, but we've got a family member up country who's come down with it. In theory, precautions were taken, so we're not sure where they got it from.
Well, I mean, but, the thing is, though, is that, I mean, precautions basically reduce the chance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you're kind of changing, like, a roll of a dice from a D6 to a D20 instead. It's impossible to get that one to get, you know, to get it. It's the fact that you're kind of reducing the chance.
Yeah. But still, I still like the results of this study.
You still like the results? Because it...
Vindicated.
It feels vindicated. It's like you finally kind of, you know,
your
personal interests have finally paid off.
It kind of ties in with, you know, when we've been watching a film and it's about an episode of a TV series.
Yeah.
Where there's some kind of sort of contamination or there's a virus or, you know, anything that can be an infection. And, you know, you're watching it and you're thinking, have none of these people ever seen a zombie film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, you wouldn't do that. It's like, you know, oh, yeah, they're dead. It's okay. They're, you know, they're fine now. It's like, do not trust the corpse.
I always get freaked out when people let bodily fluids get on them and stuff like that.
Well,
like,
let.
Well, in some cases, I feel a bit like...
Don't judge.
And it's just like, if you don't feel that that's a possible source of contamination and such. Like, really? Really? Mind you, oh, what was it we saw... I think it might have been a What Culture episode where they looked at, like, certain plot points in films that, like, were made, like, emphasis on plot points that happened, but then they never had any follow-through. And I think there was an instance in the Dawn of the Dead remake where somebody gets hurt in the fountain, and they're contaminated, they're already infected.
That sounds very painful.
Yeah. And they cut themselves in the fountain. Obviously, they bleed in the fountain, but nothing's ever made of the water being contaminated.
Despite the fact that the camera does actually have like a shot of the blood dispersing into it.
It's Chekhov's wound in the fountain.
Blank because, you know, obviously it's Chekhov's gun, but it doesn't actually fire a bullet. Chekhov's blank.
Okay.
It's like loads of homeopaths screaming at the screen.
You're making the infection much, much worse.
So everyone's going to be a zombie now.
So, I mean, with this study, is it actually causation or is it...
Let me check the correlation. So, that's the one. Let me try and find... They said the word. What? I remember seeing causation. And so I need to just double check what they said about the word. Sorry, I'm going to do a word search. cause.
I mean, what I'm taking from this is that nerds will save the world.
Well, I mean,
that's what we've been doing all year anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this is true.
Quite frankly, those scientists developing the vaccines are kind of nerdy.
I was going to say a bunch of bloody nerds. Especially that researcher.
Bunch of glorious nerds.
Oh, yeah. With it being modified RNA, which is, you know, the mRNA, which was a way out theory years ago. You know, the idea that you could modify RNA to cause an immune response.
Okay, yeah, so it is technically a correlational study, so you cannot say for definite.
Yeah. So it might be just that people that are predisposed to... being okay in this type of scenario are more likely to be watching stuff where that, you know,
the worst happens.
Yeah, when the worst happens.
Yeah.
So it is. Yeah.
So yeah. Can you extrapolate that this study says that, you know, it's the non-nerds who will cause all the trouble and it's the nerds that will be.
I think this study allows us to make such those terrible normies. Judgments.
It says that, but in far more words than it needs to.
I mean, seriously, like I was saying earlier, the only way they could really follow this up is by having like a set view list or something, control groups and stuff, and getting them to answer similar questions again.
I mean, to be fair, how do you feel like neurodivergent people have coped with this pandemic versus non or neurotypical people?
Aside from all the NDEs being like, what the fuck?
Bearing in mind that I'm asking you because... But, yeah.
I'm not sure if I can speak for all NDEs, but, once you get over the routine shock... I think the biggest complaint has always been it has been idiots. Why are you doing that every time someone does something that breaks the guidelines?
So I mean, do you think like routines?
Yeah,
routines. Do you think routines have helped? Because I think a lot of people. That it's really helped them.
Yeah, you need to make sure you've got a routine. Anyone who's suffering at the moment, if you haven't got a routine in place, that'll be partly why, because everything, there's not much you can control, but how you do your day is something, and there could be a lot of relief in actually getting a routine together and kind of like a schedule and a series of actions, but you can't get kind of like obsessive about it, because that will also be bad.
I mean, I suppose in certain circumstances, that's where it also falls down. If somebody's already had a pattern,
I know a lot of people have had issues. They had issues adjusting in the first few months.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like if part of your routine is to do something like outside that you can no longer do, that's got to be a major kind of. Not sure what exactly the word is, but major horrible feeling.
I also think in some ways, you may have the initial issue coping with the massive change, with, you know, the world is doing this, to the world is definitely not doing that, and don't do it, otherwise we may all die. But it also means that, you know, some people who may be worried about, you know, things which are unlikely to happen, like, you know, they're worried about going out because it's a long journey and that requires, you know, lots of roads being crossed. So they worry about, you know, a family member doing that because, you know, it's always the, well, you hear so much about car accidents.
Mm.
But then everything, you know, everything kind of moves up to that level. So in a way, does that kind of help? Because then, you know, your worries are not seen as, you know, so unreasonable. You're now more worried about, you know, the person going out and catching something, which is what the rest of the planet is, you know, also,
I think,
saying.
Yes and no.
Mm, yeah.
Yes, in the sense that I think most people would, you know, be basically like, well, it's actually normal to, whenever you go into a shop, to basically use a hand rub and whatnot and basically keep yourself clean and not making, not kind of picking stuff up from the store and then putting it back down straight away type thing. But by the same token, there are still people that think this is all a hoax and that, you know, basically all these safeguards, they're, you know, absolutely rubbish. They don't even work. And it's, yeah, there's kind of people that are, I think it's kind of drawn a line.
I'm going to take us away from the pandemic for a moment, but still relate to this study. I wonder, I don't know the other studies that they reference in this, but I do also wonder if there's that simulation and that resilience building element from watching stuff. If you get the same thing like from other media types. So if, as a kid, if you watch, if you don't have happy smiley time films all the time and you do actually have some of the kid, you know, there's some PG rated kids films where it's like somebody dies, there's a horrible accident, you know, stuff that actually makes you go through the motions of grief when you're then presented with death of a pet or of a loved one, do those individuals then perhaps have a better chance of actually handling that grief in that situation and stuff like that, like other modeling other things?
I'm not sure, because I mean the kind of grief that people are feeling at the moment will be slightly different, because when you're not in a pandemic, you're often able to go see somebody that's on death's door, or you're able to kind of go to a funeral to say goodbye. We don't have that at the moment, so it might be a case of this kind of feeling still very much out of sorts, because their usual kind of models, which say that you would say kind of buy at the grave.
I'm saying outside of the pandemic, of the pandemic, if you expose yourself, say, other groups to different types of media where there's a life situation that doesn't happen very often, could it get you used to it, such as dealing with grief and death as a child? So if you watch something like All Dogs Go to Heaven or The Lion King, preferably the original, because frick the live action one, where characters die.
You know, you've done a horrible thing there, because I had genuinely forgotten the quote-unquote live action Lion King was in existence.
Same.
I'm sorry for opening that wound, guys. I'm sorry, I can make you psychologically resilient.
That's all right, because I've seen Lion King and I know exactly how that feels. No, just kidding. But I mean, in general, it's kind of thought that those things do help out. And, you know, when, you know, somebody identifies with the character on the TV screen with their particular loss, they do kind of go through that kind of emotional kind of thing as well. So I kind of definitely say that
there might be the
in
possibility.
General it helps.
But again, as they said towards the end of the study, there's a correlation, but not necessarily a causation.
Yeah.
So I don't think I think we've talked this.
But I do think that kind of dealing with death is a different one at the moment. So I mean, even like when you're kind of dealing with zombie films, for example, you're usually able to kind of have this kind of dramatic and emotional moment where somebody's able to physically say goodbye to them type thing, and we don't have that at the moment. So it's, yeah. It's still, it's not a perfect model.
Mm.
But on the whole, I think, yeah, possibly.
We can but hope.
But I mean, part of the issue is that everybody's experience of this pandemic has been different anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, people say, oh, we're all in this together. We're kind of not. Because there are people going through various different, you know, kind of things that other people are not.
And also people living in different countries are having an incredibly different experience, yeah. Especially if the resources and all government involved are lacking.
Yeah. But I mean, say for example, somebody who's kind of on insulin or HRT or, you know, needs, for whatever reason, kind of chemotherapy and whatnot, and they're having to kind of weigh up the pros and cons of kind of, do you go to the hospital and kind of risk, you know, kind of getting COVID or whatnot, or do you stay at home, or depending on...
Well, it's not just hospitals that go to your doctors.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. You know, that there are more risks in going into like a hospital and whatnot. So... And, you know, there are kind of people afraid of having, you know, what they need not catered for.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
On that pressing note, I think people should just watch more horror films.
But specific ones, because, I mean, presumably slashers don't really count.
And if you want a nice
optimistic
view, you know, there's always the pandemic episodes of Star Trek where they manage to work it out. Although sometimes with a thorn, you know, thorn in the tail.
If you want to watch something completely unrelated to any of this mess, you might as well just follow the crown and just watch Bridgerton on Netflix. If you can get past the first few episodes, it really starts to find its rhythm.
Can I just say also that watching stuff at the moment where it's like dramas and whatnot, and because obviously we're in a pandemic at the moment and we're all in lockdown, or you know, kind of basically being at home most of the time, and kind of seeing that sense of normality from like yesteryear, it's kind of a bit weird.
There is nothing normal about the yesteryear of Bridgerton. It's just beautiful.
Well, I wasn't thinking about Bridgerton yeah. particularly. But I was thinking more stuff that is kind of meant to be set roughly now.
Like Hannibal.
What? I'm pretty sure that there was like either a TV series or film that we watched recently, very, very recently, that was actually set in like 2000 or something like that. And it's like, no, you weren't, because there's no COVID in that.
Oh, Lordy, yes, there was. I can't remember what the film was.
I don't think it was King of Staten Island, because no, it wasn't King of Staten Island. That was set before.
This might have been a romantic comedy or something. Was it a film we gave up watching?
Very possible. There was a film that we gave up watching.
There was at least one we gave up watching recently.
It's not enough pandemic.
Bollocks to this.
But yeah, it's really weird.
Really wish you'd given up on watching that Patient Zero I mentioned.
Oh.
What was that?
It was shit.
Fair.
It was on Amazon Prime for anyone who's morbidly curious and likes Matt Smith and Stanley Tucci and Natalie Dormer.
Oh yeah, I think you mentioned it.
Yeah, where it's like post-apocalyptic, which is why we watched it, because we like our post-apocalypses, post-apocalyptic. And it was very very sub sci-fi channel movie, except with mysteriously decent people in
it. I mean, sometimes that can be like. Yeah, like you're kind of wondering, were the actors duped?
Well, I read up about it, and I think we got it a little bit confused with the girl with all the gifts. which was
that's actually okay.
That's good. We've watched that, so yeah, it was like, oh, you know, this is on Prime because they've started having a, you know, these are the movies we've added recently, and you say, oh, so I can actually tell what the hell is on Prime. And yeah, we watched the trailer and thought, yeah, we'll watch that. And then yeah, watched the actual film, and it was, well, that could have been done in half an hour. And I can kind of see why it was slated for a cinema release, and then that kind of kept being put back, and then it ended up sort of slipping out on DVD.
Joe, I've just realised maybe all the people in the study that seemed very psychologically prepared, it wasn't the films that was the issue, it's the fact that they'd watched almost every single season of The Walking Dead. And so they already had an inbuilt expectation for how long a pandemic could go on for.
Yeah, that last thing. No, because, I mean, when you're watching a film, like, the pandemic on the film will be kind of over in, like, well, maybe like 2 hours or so. You know, TV series like Walking Dead, no, it just keeps on going.
Is there a separation, you know, again, with, you know, here, with, between people who will watch a pandemic film because they know it has a happy ending? Because I know people like this, or at least, you know,
yeah,
they
didn't make that distinction in the study.
Yeah, but, you know, they'll watch a disaster movie so long as they know it's got a happy ending. They hate the idea that it's got a bad ending. So, watch something like, you know, like Outbreak with Dustin Hoffman, and you know that they're going to cure it. It's, you know, it's a race while this thing looks like it's getting out of control for them to stop it. And then, of course, you know, the whole thing is, The Walking Dead, it's after that has already, it's by far gone way beyond ever stopping it, hasn't it, by the, you know, the first episode.
Yeah, but I mean, like, when it kind of comes to pandemic movies, because the drama is based on, like, the initial reaction and the initial outbreak and whatnot, and then there's, like, 5 seconds at the end where it's like, yes, we've got the cure, and there's, like, a screen that just says, and that's all done, so the world was cured after that point. And it's like, what about the fucking years that it actually takes to vaccinate everybody against this thing?
No, it's magic. They found the cure. And the virus goes, oh, wait, hang on. This is like the 10 o'clock closing in pubs.
I need to double check that. Does it take years to vaccinate the world? Because there's only one thing we can actually compare that with.
Is it the Spanish flu?
No, it's smallpox vaccine.
Fair.
Smallpox. How long? Smallpox eradication. Eradicated world.
That did take years to pass on.
It was officially declared eradicated in 1979. How long did it take them to? Because obviously they did that global rollout in the 70s. What's the WHO doing now? The WHO doesn't tell us how quickly they got rid of it. They did the official program. So the last naturally occurring case was 1977. Da, da, da. So I think it took them about maybe a decade or so to, like, properly get rid of it once they really concentrated on getting rid of it. But the thing is, it depends on resources. It always depends on resources. It depends on how many people you got trained to deliver the vaccine. The stability of the vaccine, because, like, some areas in the world it's hard to get refrigeration and stuff. Yeah. So, like, I mean, like, what? Which of the vaccines that we've got, it's like, has to be stored at, was it minus 70? Like, you can take that to some health clinic in, like, sub-Saharan, like, Africa. You'd be lucky if the freaking cooling for it actually lasts long enough to get it to a refrigeration unit. But then you'd also, like, have the logistics of, like, trying to get people to that clinic. And then even if you went to villages and went house to house, it'd still be an absolute pain in the ass. Yeah.
And that's the thing, you know, because at the moment they're obviously kind of vaccinating using, like, GP surgeries and whatnot. In this country, in the UK. And I'm just kind of sat there thinking, like, what about the homeless people that aren't necessarily registered with a GP? What happens about those?
Yeah.
I mean, there are health services with certain charities and stuff. Like locally in Cornwall, we have St. Petrucks, who work to end street homelessness in Cornwall. Okay. And they do, and even and their services are still open to like single homeless people in Cornwall at the moment.
Yeah.
And part of their services do include a degree of there's like clinic access at both sites in Truro and Penzance. But I don't know what it means. I think there has been criticism recently that the vaccination plans do not include enough to deal with people who are homeless. Mm. I mean, considering that the government, after its initial let's get everyone off the streets during the initial stages of the pandemic, seems to have abandoned that in this latter push at the moment. It's sadly unsurprising that they may have also been forgotten during vaccination plans again. Vast vaccination centres in places that aren't health clinics is something that has been happening. So in Cornwall, we've got a massive vaccination centre that's been put together at the Stithian Showground, which is it's not miles away from us, but it's a good drive away from where we are. And other, obviously, mass vaccination sites have been put in. I know that obviously there was the whole thing in... Oh, what was it, LA over the weekend? The Dodgers Stadium? Where was some bullshit shenanigans going on? I still don't know the complete truth of that, so I'm not going to complete what I've heard, because I heard conflicting things. But they had a mass vaccination center at a stadium, drive through. I feel like, guys, we've exhausted this subject somewhat. I think
I'll kind of look through my.
We've got it beaten.
Just see.
Paul had a list of questions he was going to see.
We've answered most of them naturally.
Oh, okay.
So
is one of them, is there cake?
One that I come up with, are there any specific examples of films that have helped you deal with the pandemic? Like, say, for example, obviously the Contagion is like, you know.
Everyone's been referring to Contagion, but I think it's because it's one of the most recent infection pandemic-y films that's been around.
But, I mean, kind of knowing what sort of mechanisms there are to begin with, that there are organisations that are on top of this, and what their processes would be and whatnot. Do you think that's helped you
I mean, I knew all that, but not necessarily from film. I mean, keep in mind that prior to this past year, I was a big I would play Plague Inc. quite often, and I was very aware of vectors and then steps that might be taken to deal with it. Well, there's some elements of the game that are a bit unrealistic, like a lot of the vector transmissions and the way mutations can suddenly happen. It's very kind of like, yeah, that's kind of what happens out there in the real world.
So you feel like Plague Inc. has helped you kind of deal with this?
A little bit.
Has it made you see the world through COVID eyes?
Yeah, I mean, the whole mutation situation that everyone keeps freaking out about.
Not to mention, kind of transmission with, like, airplanes going all over the place.
Oh, God, yeah.
We've only just gone, nope, we don't need airplanes to go everywhere in there.
Yeah, in Plague Inc., if you want to win, you start in a country that has got good air traffic corridors, and then you infect the heck out of that country.
I mean, it kind of makes you think that if this would have happened somewhere other than China, somewhere other than the US, Europe type thing.
Yeah, if it happened in an isolated location, it would have been fine. The fact that it didn't is part of the problem. And also the longevity of the virus. Compared to something like Ebola, which was the last freaking outbreak that everyone was seriously freaking out, which wasn't a long-term health issue, like something like, unfortunately, like HIV, which is still a major public health concern globally. But Ebola, which I think still is, there are still a couple of pockets of that in Africa at the moment. It's been sidelined.
I think I vaguely remember an article about somebody that had Ebola and then recovered and has since got COVID. And has recovered.
Yeah, an unfortunate situation for that individual. But Ebola, right, so it works faster.
Mm.
it started off in areas with far poor transport links, and that's one of the reasons, like, it kills people faster, a lot faster, and I think it might actually have a higher death rate. It's too effective in some ways at killing before it can transmit. But basically, the only reason that wasn't as bad as it was, like, in, was it 2014? Was because it kind of couldn't geographically get out of the area fast enough before it killed people. Mm. It was still a problem. And obviously the communities that were vastly affected by it were, like, thoroughly screwed and still are recovering from things like that. But COVID is, it can transmit easier in the sense that it can survive for longer. Mm. And the symptoms are far less obvious. Like, when you've got blood coming out of places,
it shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, it's a bit freaking obvious, you know, if you've got something like that and a temperature, like, oh my god. You know, it makes a difference. Though, both diseases have been obviously traced to interactions between humans and animals.
And, I mean, in terms of your epidemiology knowledge,
which is not official, and it's been years since I've had any actual biology lessons, but yeah.
I mean, what kind of media has kind of, I suppose, poked at the embers of that interest?
House. I mean, come on, like, House's main, is an epidemiologist. Like, that is his, they asked me about pronunciation, that is his specialism.
Is it?
Yeah, it's infectious disease.
I thought his, you know, speciality was it's not lupus.
That too. But and taking pills that he should be taking for a long term. But, you know, slowly killing.
So it's basically organs. House is how you know about it. Or has
House has really highly dramatized versions of how diseases work. And poor Dr. Mike's reactions on YouTube to episodes of House are terrifying. But I mean,
hell, he wouldn't do that. What?
Yeah, there is a smallpox episode, actually.
I mean, there's so I know at the moment, I think The Good Doctor, not that it's actually come onto our screens yet, the fourth season, but I think that one is actually dealing with COVID. Because it'll be stupid to fucking ignore.
Well, yeah, because they've been trying to set that in the present day in Seattle, haven't they?
But I think in a previous, I think it might have been either season one or season two, there was an episode where there was like an outbreak of something, whether it was like meningitis or something else. I can't remember exactly.
Oh, well, it was meningitis and House. And keep in mind that both House and The Good Doctor have the same showrunners or the same person he's brought it to our screens. But yeah, House had the whole meningitis episode. I think it was viral. Was it viral meningitis? I think so. I don't think it was meningitis B. But yeah, sort of as a thing. And House had a plague episode. It had an anthrax episode. I was just trying to think of all the disease highlights, which are, like, highly transmissible now.
Were there any other metal bands that were featured?
Oh, what was the one with Foreman where he got infected and they thought at one point it was Legionnaires, but turned out to be
I can't remember what the specific disease was, but it involved pigeon poo at dirtying a water source at a place where some dude might have been a cop, was growing weed illegally in a suit. Fun times.
But they all get wrapped up in, you know, one or two episodes maximum.
Most of them one, because it's usually case of the week, except for some plots.
And it's usually like, it's okay, it wasn't quite as bad as we thought.
I mean, they wrap stuff up really quickly, like a whole lot of the diagnostic stuff. It's like the results would take back a while, especially if they're they're genetically testing something to find out what specific strain it is or what even the genome of an individual is. But yeah, so have I sort of answered your question? I mean, oh, and the other things, okay, Dawn of the Dead always. more so than Night of the Living Dead. Either Dawn of the Dead, I mean, the original or the remake, you know. The Walking Dead, at least the early seasons.
I mean, so another question that I had here, which I don't think is phrased very well, but do you think lack of verisimilitude or believability in the pandemic has been a factor for COVID deniers? So people who literally, as we said earlier, literally cannot believe it because it sounds like some sort of sci-fi kind of film or piece of fiction.
I don't think that's necessarily the issue. I think the issue is science education.
Science education.
Yeah. I mean, it's only in recent years that the government's been heavily pushing on STEM, though also to the detriment of other subjects which help with critical thinking and original thinking. But people who perhaps didn't do very well in science, especially biology, obviously, but even like didn't do well in science classes or felt bored by it, are probably also the same people that tend to be denying a lot.
No, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think there are a lot of people like that, that, you know, the deniers didn't pay attention. By the same token, I think there are a lot of people that didn't particularly do well in science and didn't understand stuff, but they're still kind of aware that there is a pandemic going on.
There, but they might have at least picked up some critical thinking skills from somewhere else. Actually, which, maybe forget STEM.
You know, we should seriously teach critical thinking.
Yeah, maybe the issue is not STEM, it is that it is critical thinking. Yeah, it needs to be taught more in school.
And, you know, when it comes to, how do we tell what's real and what's not, what's fake, you know, what's misinformation, what's actual information? If only there was a much maligned further study education thing, which was like studies of the media.
Humanities, you mean?
Yeah. Anything studies. Like that. You know, humanities, media studies, it's just, come on. They're right there.
Okay, you know what? That's never prepared. Let's just get yourself a degree in like English and media studies. And you might study English.
I mean, in terms of preparedness, I'm not entirely sure whether English with media studies would be most people's first pick from preparedness.
No, but you might at least be able to pick your way through Daily Mail headlines with some sense of sanity.
I mean, you know, I think a lot of people have probably picked up hobbies. I know my dad has been doing more kind of gardening.
I'm slightly worried how much furniture he's making out of pallets at the moment. There's a lot of pallet repurposing going on at that house.
Which is good because it means that he's actually doing something active with his time.
I think a lot of the people that haven't been doing so well during the pandemic, and it might also be due to a lack of funds, but also like people who've never really had a hobby before, like their downtime was spent going out with people and they never had something that they kind of did that was just them or them and one other person. There's a lot of people who don't have hobbies, who don't make things, who don't have a passion for something.
I just think it's a bit weird to not have hobbies, but then that's me.
Yeah.
I'm king of hobbies. I am Simon Quinlan.
I mean, I would consider myself weird in that respect because I've picked up several hobbies over the past year, but I still suffer sometimes with kind of mental health and basically being either stuck at home or at work and there's kind of nothing, you know, kind of happening in between, as it were, and whatnot. So I think, yeah, it's not like if you're feeling depressed, get a hobby, it'll cure it.
I think some people who didn't have issues beforehand, like part of it is like they haven't figured out how to fill their time and they haven't had any other commitments, and it's like, well, if you can't go see your friends, you could do something else as long as you're not too down. I'm not saying that if you're down you have to get a hobby, that is wrong. Like, you should work on trying to get to some level of personal, not happiness, but personal okayness, to feel that you can do something that's beyond making sure that you've eaten something today and got dressed.
I think part of the problem is, though, is that basically because other people are so part of our lives, even if you get a hobby, you kind of want to show other people. You kind of want to, you know, involve them somehow. Like, oh, this is something that I made. Or, you know, this is something that I've kind of done.
To be fair, I was already doing that over social media before all this. I somehow got a really popular knitting side blog, which I discovered last year. It was just quite surprised me.
Well, you discovered that it was popular, not that.
I had a side blog years ago, and it crossed post from my Instagram, and my Instagram's not very popular, but my side blog on Tumblr is, and I was just like, oh, okay, hi people.
I mean, I was already kind of getting into like D&D before the pandemic hit, so I'd been kind of working on
people have been using to help them get through everything actually setting up D&D groups with friends and family online.
When I say Simon Quinlan, do either of you have a bloody clue what I'm talking about?
Afraid not.
If you give me more context, I might hit myself in a moment, so give me more context and I might
Fist
hit myself.
Of Fun?
Nope.
Oh, damn it, what's the name of the comedian? He's in so many things. Kevin Eldon.
Not heard of him, or at least...
Oh, good God! Not that I'm judging or anything, but seriously fucking judging right now.
But I mean, say for example, like kind of crafting in one. I've got more into that as part of us kind of the D&D thing. But I've also got into like, you know, kind of trying to like grow fruit and veg and whatnot a bit. And yeah, that's getting there. But it's kind of something that's kind of keeping me a little bit occupied, you know, a space in my brain. But it's not kind of filling everything, as it were.
I'm not saying I have developed a problem collecting broken arcade PCBs, but
however, the evidence on this podcast suggests.
Well, let's see. I'll just do a quick test because I've been dumping the EEPROMs on them. So let's have a little look in my folder of dumps. I started last year owning 2 arcade PCBs, which were Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Thunder Dragon, which was a vertical, you know, shoot 'em up. And bearing in mind I don't have everything dumped, my separate folders of dumped games, I've got 44 selected there.
Oh, okay. Just the soul.
Yeah, so I started with 2. I now have 46.
Wow. I think other ways to stay sane during a pandemic is just to watch Hannibal, you know.
There has
that
been
has
so
been
much
a coping mechanism for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
Yeah, so much box setting, so much co-op play.
I mean, I know at the beginning of the pandemic, Animal Crossing had just hit, so that was kind of a coping mechanism for a lot of people as well. But for some reason, I think this lockdown just feels longer, even though it probably isn't. You know, the one start. Yeah,
I think
maybe
kind of,
it's just
it's,
because
it's
everything
like,
seems so far
again.
Away. But yeah.
I think, gentlemen, that we have said all that we can for this episode.
It's not that we've said that all that we can. It's just that you want to go to bed.
That too.
I can say plenty more.
Oh,
just
no.
Challenge me.
No.
Can I sneak in one last question?
Okay, fine.
Right, so regarding this study. Fine.
The pandemic practice, horror film, horror fans, and more morbidly curious individuals are more psychologically resilient during the COVID-19 pandemic. Yes, this study.
Do you think it matters what type of horror it is?
Yeah, I think the study seems to... Well, the study doesn't say specifically genre questions, except for the general... Okay, so participants were asked what extent they agreed, 7-point scales, with each of 10 statements that said, I would consider myself a fan of, like, movies and TV shows. The 10 types of movies and TV shows were horror, zombie, psychological thriller, supernatural, apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic, science fiction, alien invasion, crime, comedy, and romance. Since simulations should work best when they present information relevant to real-world situations, we combine the genres where the imagined world is illustrative of the chaos that might occur in the real-world pandemic, zombie, apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic, and alien invasion, into a prepper genres variable. Only the prepper and horror genre variables were of interest in the analysis. The other genre variables were used to mask the intent of the study. Participants were also asked to rate the extent to which they agreed on the 7-point scales with a statement of generic TV show entertainment. I enjoy watching TV shows and movies. Since greater enjoyment of horror films could be a side effect of greater enjoyment for films in general, this item was used as a control in regression models. So the preppers genre, where you have a shitty situation and you need to find a way out of it, or you've prepped for the shitty situation and you wrote it out.
I mean, would that cover all horror?
No.
With a finding?
They said supernatural and stuff, but they didn't include it in that prepper genre. And they didn't say, well, slashers are technically a subgenre of psychological thrillers in a way. Or it's a psychological horror, like slasher, even though it's gory a lot of the time, and that it is more about the scare a lot of the time than anything else.
It also teaches you valuable things. You know, like if it's late at night and you've been watching the news about the local murders.
Don't go outside.
Yeah. If you hear something, maybe reconsider going outside alone and going, "Hello, is there anyone there? I'm alone. I'm very, very garrotable."
It does make me wonder about kind of whether people who watch the news a lot are more likely to watch, you know, kind of for the coronavirus information and whatnot. Are they more likely or less likely to be horror fans? And
I would say less likely, because most people that watch live news are boomers.
First of all, how dare you?
You're Gen X. What are you worried about?
Being anywhere adjacent to boomers in any comparison, that's what I'm worried about.
When you say boomers, are you thinking like the generational boomers, or are you thinking like Left 4 Dead boomers?
When anyone says boomers, I think Gears. The one that got boom.
Yeah. No, but like the whole sort of news cycle kind of thing, that is very much our parents' generation kind of thing, because that's when that kind of news was seriously introduced.
Mm, yeah.
I've started watching evening news a little bit more at the moment, but that's purely because we finally sorted out our dining room table.
I have to be very picky, because otherwise what passes for the news bulletins, like 6 o'clock or whatever, drives me up the wall.
We can just about cope with the general local news and Channel 4 news.
Yeah, it's kind of weird when you kind of see
Channel 4 news is excellent, so...
Yeah.
But you can kind of see when, like, the news is kind of... It's very, very slow, apart from, like, this one or two, huge stories, because they'll kind of bring on something like, and such is in a TV drama or whatever, and we're going live to them now to have like a small interview with this person that has managed to get this acting job. It's just like, okay.
I heartily, if you think your local news isn't up to much, I heartily invite you up to Cumbria.
Oh dear.
Well, we can't do that now, can we?
Not at the moment. No, there's something going on.
If we get stopped by the police on the way up, it's all right. Our co-host invited us.
Yeah, saying something about watching the local news. What? I don't need cuffs, officer. It's quite okay. Not small.
I'm just looking back at the like of
verisimilitude
in the pandemic has been a fact. Actually, one of the big factor potentially for COVID deniers has been the way that content moderation happens. I can't remember the exactness of the study. It's something I shared around at work the other day, but basically somebody's done a study that looks at content moderation, Reddit, and people who end up going into conspiracy groups. And basically, depending on how you do moderation in open Reddit groups will affect whether or not people will then end up just going into fringe conspiracy theory groups.
So basically, if they kind of get shouted down and then they get blocked, they're more likely to go to the
extreme end. Yeah, basically. That's another study that's kicking about. That's a longer study, I want to point out, to read. We've got it open in one of my browsers to have a look at.
And it does seem like COVID has come at the worst time, considering all of the, you know, misinformation that has already been going over the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, because basically the side effects / long-term effects of what happened as a result of 2016 have not been properly remedied, because big tech has it's partly a governance issue from actual governments. B, it's big tech actually deciding to take a stance, and C, it's kind of like, yeah, it's a media literacy issue.
And I mean, you can kind of see it as well, because they've taken kind of political examples of like somebody that's kind of turned around and said that all those Black Lives Matters protesters, they're, you know, looters and whatnot, and they're not even wearing any masks. And then sort of like a couple of months or even like a couple of days later, they're basically being like, oh, COVID is a hoax, you know, wearing masks is what's going to kill you, type thing. And it's like they're the same people that believe, you know, kind of this one political thing and this, you know, this anti-COVID thing. It's kind of weird. I've seen numerous examples of, you know, the exact same person having those kind of that type of tweets out. In fact, I think I'm following someone on Twitter that does it. It's like conservative cell phones or something like that.
Okay.
But yeah. You right?
I think that's all we've got time for this episode.
Okay.
So it's good night from.
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night for me, Paul Blurt. I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlurt.
And it's good night for me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter, EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. Episodes are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Nerds Podcast, and we're on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast. That's it. Good night.
Good night. I don't see any.
I'm looking at Twitter, I can't see.
Wait, don't we?